To you, it's just a game. For me, it's all I know. I make them remember my name before I have to go. Losing, I can't fathom. That's a champion's passion. Confidence never lacking. Drop the beat, let's attack them. They be checking for the content. You tired of that nonsense. No gimmicks, break limits. Quality is our promise. This is more than a show. This is a way of life. Cause the game, as it grows, takes us to higher heights. Check the stats before you check me. And don't tell me who the greatest if you don't know the history. Robert Ramon and Carl Close, the new big three, and if the opinions ain't from them, don't bring them to me, cause I go off like a rocket launcher. Man, I just ate the beat, I'm a real monster. I can hear the crowd chanting MVP, that's my mantra. Here's a standing O for the opinionated bench warmers.
Welcome to the Opinionated Benchwarmers Podcast, episode 163. Your Opinionated Benchwarmers are back to do what we do best, and that's discuss sports. Fellas, I'm excited to be back. I missed last week, man. How y'all doing, man?
Good as always, brother, man. I'm glad to have you back, man. I tell you what, man, I'm hosting duties. It ain't as easy as it look, man. You make it look easy, so I'm glad to have you back, man.
Yeah, ready to ride shotgun again, huh? Pretty much, but yeah, nah, bro. It's been an interesting day for me, honestly. Been kind of a little bit of a crazy, hectic day. So I always kind of look forward to this moment to break away from everything that was going on and do what we love to do. So as I always say, I'm not gonna hold it. I'm gonna let us get straight into it, bro. I'm gonna hand it straight back over.
Man, make sure you follow us on @O_Benchwarmers on Twitter and Instagram. Make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast, Opinionated Benchwarmers, wherever you like to listen to your podcast. But we're going to jump right back into it. Fellas, I'm back. I'm excited. I'm ready to get going. Like you said, you know, long day. Happy to see y'all faces. Happy to do what we do week to week. You know, we appreciate the love and support that we're getting out there. Man, we're going to jump right into it. We're going to address the elephant in the room. Look, I done already been disrespected in my text messages when I woke up this morning. I've been trolled all week. The Los Angeles Lakers were finally put out of their misery last night at the hands of the Denver Nuggets. Gentlemen sweep. We were able to get one game on Saturday. And then last night, I actually went to bed at the third quarter. Call me a fan or whatever. I have to get up early for work. But I just saw where it was going. And it would have broke my heart to see us go out the way that we did. So I look like I made the right decision. But gentlemen, Lakers out again. You know, and that's just a track record. You know, dating back since we won a championship, 2021 a championship, 2021 we missed the playoffs, 2022 we bounced out the first round.
Nah, we made the playoffs in 2021. We got bounced.
2021.
Yeah, we got bounced in 2021, yeah. And in 2022 we didn't make it.
2022 we didn't make it. 2023 we got swept by the Nuggets, and then 2024 now we got swept again, gentlemen sweep against the Nuggets again. The Nuggets have proven to be our Achilles heel, gentlemen. Take it away.
And it's unfortunate what's about to happen to Darvin Ham in that situation when you think about the Lakers. He's ran into the Nuggets, arguably the best team the last 2 years, right? And, you know, he's about to get fired, you know, and as he should because of adjustments and different things, but it's tough. It's a tough business. You don't win, you lose your job. You know, if you look at our record from this year to last year, we actually improved 4 games. So when you look at that and you think about that, is we improved. Yes, we got a 7 seed, but also the West got super tough. The West right now, with our record last year, I saw somewhere where with our record last year, if we would have had the record that we had this year, last year, we would have been somewhere in the top 4 teams, which is nuts. Nuts to think about. So again, it's unfortunate. I mean, it's one of the, I mean, you look at our team, right? And we got a good team. We got a good team, and we just couldn't stay healthy. We couldn't get the players back in time to defend on those plays. And we lost the same exact way we lost game 2. Literally gave up a crucial rebound, kick out to a 3 to really bring it. Just again, the same thing happened again, where we dominated and played well all game. And in crunch time, we keep Austin Reeves, or we don't substitute our defensive guys in. It would have been nice to see a Jared Vanderbilt in on that last play. I know he hasn't played all game, but some length on a Jamal Murray and not Austin Reeves, you know, that's easy buckets, you know. And these guys are getting to their spots. We didn't double. We didn't do anything to really get them off it on that play. It was just pick and roll, pick my spot, ball game. So, again, it's disappointing, and I'm just, you know, I can't wait to the day where we could be back on top again. I'll just say that, to be honest.
Yeah. I think kind of, man, my take on it is what made this series so difficult is the fact that you look at the Lakers led for 69% of this series. As far as if we go from a minute standpoint, the Lakers led 69% of action in these games. And so you look at a situation where, honestly, you can go toe-to-toe with Denver. You actually, if you look from a high-level sense, would almost venture to say that you outplayed them in a lot of key aspects. But when it came down to crunch time, when it came down to times where you truly needed to execute, Denver is just a whole different level and a whole different animal in their execution in late game stretches. And I think that a lot of that comes from, to me, honestly, coaching. Their sets down the stretch, they know what they're going to, and you can't do anything about it. They know what they're doing, and you cannot do anything to stop it. And I just feel that, you know, Darvin Ham, you know, honestly, as you mentioned, he's probably going to be a casualty. But I feel that he let this team down throughout the course of the season. I think if this team doesn't go through the stretches where he had the wrong starting lineup, where he has guys like D'Lo and Austin Reeves coming off the bench, you know, instead having guys like Torian Prince and Cam Reddish being starters for prolonged periods of time, you probably don't even face Denver, honestly, in the first round. And then you look at some of the late game execution. One of my main things and one of my main issues with Darvin Ham, and it reared his head last night within that third quarter, is he does not know when to call a timeout. If you see a team, they going on a quick little run, call that timeout quickly. Timeout. Yeah. He let them go on a 14-2 run that completely swung that game. And then after that, it was just an uphill battle. And so that's just kind of my quick take on it. I'm a little frustrated. You probably hear the frustration in my voice. And I
you're
tried
passionate,
to
de- my brother. Yeah, you're passionate.
I tried to detach myself at the game, too. I told y'all in the group, me, we all said we were trying to detach. But, you know, through and through, we Lakers fans, we bleed purple and gold. And as much as we try to say we're going to detach, you can't fully detach. So,
yeah, I mean, I think I've kind of said my sentiments on this podcast all season long about my frustration with Darvin Ham. This hands in his pocket, nonchalant. It's just, you know, he doesn't know when to call a timeout, and it you know, some games he does it, some of the games he don't. I think he lost that locker room. I think he lost it maybe with just over a quarter into the season ending. I think that he lost that locker room. He didn't respect LeBron, didn't respect him. D'Lo doesn't respect him. AD doesn't respect him. When you hear him in the press conference talking about, we don't know what to do on both sides end of the floor. So when you look at Darvin Ham, no, I don't think he's a good head coach. I think he's more so the motivator type. And I think that he's not the technician that we need. But I don't know about you guys, but I think that we have to make some moves. I think that it's time to tear it down. I think that it's time to bust it up. I think that it's time for us to start over. Let's build this team organically. We began doing this dating back to B.I., dating back to Lonzo Ball. Okay, we know historically his injuries and everything. We had Julius Randle. You know, we had these young cats. I mean, you look at what Josh Hart's doing with the Knicks. I mean, that was our prospect. We are a historically great team at drafting young prospects and evaluating young talent. We need to lean on that more. We see what OKC is, number one seed in the West right now, because you got a guy in Sam Presti that stacked those picks, that built that team the right way. Now, it's going to be some dark years, and I know that Los Angeles traditionally, historically, we're not a patient franchise, which is why we're in the predicament we're in right now. But when I look at this team, you know, I'm kind of over the LeBron era, just because LeBron just dictates and requires so much maintenance as far as what he wants, and he brings so much attention and everything he says draws. And I think it's at the detriment of just building a team. I mean, I think there's times in this season where LeBron is not out there or AD's not out there. What was that game where we just blew out? I don't know who that was. We blew out without AD and LeBron.
The Celtics.
the Celtics, the best team in NBA without them, because they didn't have the pressure of playing with LeBron. And although LeBron is an all-time great, so I don't even call him the GOAT, to me, he's the second best player to ever play basketball. But I think that, you know, it's time for us to walk away. It's time for LeBron to go to another team. It's time for him to go and have his farewell tour. And let us, as me, as a passionate Lakers fan, I love the franchise, and I want us to build this team the right way.
Yeah, no, I love that breakdown. And I think I'm a little bit along the lines the same way of building the team. But again, I would just ask this question, Rob. You said how you would rebuild this team. Remind how you think you would rebuild the team. What would be your first steps of rebuilding this team as you go into offseason with LeBron with a player option, right? If you go into offseason with D'Angelo Russell with a player option, we got three tradable picks this offseason. How do you rebuild this team? Do you walk away from them star players and build like Rob was speaking? Or do you do like the Lakers historically do, chase the stars, trade for a big guy? How would you rebuild this team to get us right?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, I definitely see the point. I definitely see the point of building up and building it organically. But I'm going to just say, man, you know, in LA, man, it's still star driven. It's still that mentality. And I think that we can't shift from the LeBron era until LeBron is ready to make that particular move. I don't think that we can think with the thought process to move past that. Because it sets a precedent. The thing about it is you win with stars. And I do understand that OKC is doing what they're doing, and I see the young prospects and things of that sort. But honestly, I don't see OKC. I don't think that they're going to win at all. Honestly, when you've looked at trajectory of this league and 90% of the championships that have been won, it's with the all-time greats. And so I think that you still, although it may delay you and may kind of set you back for years to come, you still got to, you know, build around that guy. And so with that being said, a guy like D'Lo, honestly, his time is really up in L.A. I think that he will be out of there. I think that he will move on. I think that for me, what scares me a little bit is that you're starting to hear the rumblings again of chasing the third star. And that's what I don't want us to do as an organization. We saw what that did to us from a depth standpoint. We saw what that does anytime you have any kind of injury to any of your top tier talent.
So look at the Suns, brother. Yep. Just look at the Suns.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah. That's actually a good transition, honestly. But so to your question, I haven't actually just got into it just yet of saying, okay, how would I continue to build this around Bron and AD? But until Bron is ready to say, okay, I'm moving on, until Bron, that Sun is ready to set, particularly from him, you still got to cater to that star talent. That's just the LA vibe.
So I'll say this. I will say I am good with this roster going forward, right, with some small changes here and there, knowing that we may lose D'Lo to replace him with a player that can probably shoot and distribute, right? I am good with this roster with a better X and O's coach, right? Not a motivating coach, but a coach, right, that'll actually make the team move, make the defense work, to the adjustments, the things that a coach supposed to do, not motivate me and tell me all these different things, but actually give me X and O's, like the Denver coach is doing, man. Yeah. That dude is X and O.
Malone is a coach.
Malone
is a coach.
Like I was just going to say an example for that. Obviously, this is pie in the sky. This would never happen. Pat Riley would never let him get away. But you put Eric Spoelstra on the sidelines of this team. Lakers are winning the
conference finals. Yeah, we'll be in the
Lakers are winning the championship. Like you said, to your point, that coaching selection, that changes everything. You were able to see really in this series, toe-to-toe, like I said, 69% of the series. Not 69% of one game. 69% of the series, the Lakers led. It came down to execution down the stretch, and a big part of that is coaching.
Absolutely. And to that point, you just think about all the small things, the small plays, and two game winners on us. How many of those come down to this game? I know it looks 4-1 on paper, but again, this series is way closer than that. Any basketball fan will tell you that.
Man, and it was agonizing to watch how close we were each time. But I'll wrap this up by saying this, though. With the LeBron and his, I guess, him and the land in the bounce with retirement, I'm just ready to – I just want to rip the Band-Aid off. I know that he wants to get paid, and he will get paid. We historically do that. We take care of our superstars. But I'm just ready to move on from it. You know, and it stems from our conversation, Los, about LeBron and how many possessions he take off on defense. You know, how he turns the ball over and blames his teammates, like his attitude towards the whole deal. I don't know. Sometimes I'm just over it. I mean, I appreciate his greatness, but it's just like at the same time, it just drains me just to watch that and how it affects the team just as a whole. It's just ready, like even now. Oh, I don't know. You said that last year, bro. Like, you know that you're not retiring yet. Like, why do you keep trying to leverage something yet all the time? So I just get tired of that sometimes. And it's stuff, and that stuff, like I told you, Los, offline, and it's stuff like that that's not on the stat sheet about LeBron, but it's one of the reasons why I really just don't feel comfortable calling him the GOAT, because this is a lot of BS with him sometimes.
Yeah, no, we talked about this offline this week, and I was in full agreement, and I think it was to your surprise, because I've always been tooting the horn of LeBron being the GOAT.
That's why I put it up here, because I told him I'd record this.
No, and I agree with you, because this playoff has shown me a lot of, and I have seen this throughout the year, but, you know, it's times where LeBron is not the best teammate. You know, I know what this outside image of what he puts on and the pass-first guy and all these different things, but there's times where he's turned the ball over and then he turns and fusses at his teammates. And I'm like, that had nothing to do with your teammates. You dribble the ball off your foot. That irritates me, because yes, he's getting on his teammates or whatever, but that messes with chemistry of a team, right? That messes with how your team is performing when your lead guy is constantly throwing his hands up or complaining, or, you know, doesn't get the foul and looking at the refs while they're going down the court to lay it up. I'm like, get back down. Like, those plays right there are the differences of the game, right? When even I can name a couple times that happened. He went to the rim, got fouled, and then the Nuggets pushed it, went down, laid it up. On the call where he was mad that the bench didn't challenge it, they got a free layup. Those are points. You think about how close these games are. We're losing by 1 or 2 points. Now, we can place blame on Darvin Ham all we want, but when he's on the floor, even if you think about the rebound that Aaron Gordon got, that was LeBron's James box out. That if he would have boxed out and got that rebound, and when he kicked it out, Jamal Murray hit that three, the game is over. You know what I mean? Like, the game is over. There's multiple times when you look throughout the game, X's and O's, basketball guys, you know that, hey, LeBron is taking off these plays. He's missing these assignments, and he's missing this. And I know his age at this point, and he has to pace himself, and he can show up and do it on the offensive end, and that's not going to really show up in the box scores. But from a pure basketball guy watching the game and realizing the things that he's missing it, if I'm seeing it, his teammates are definitely seeing it too, and that's causing a chemistry problem. And that's why I say I'll be okay if he walked away from us.
So just right quickly, of course we know he'll go on his own terms, but I was just about to say, you know, you heard it here first. Fire up the trade machine, put LeBron on the block right now from Rob and Los right now on this podcast. But it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see.
All right, fellas. I think we ran that one into the ground, but we're moving along across the playoff scope. We also had the Phoenix Suns and the New Orleans Pelicans have been sent home as well. We'll start with the Phoenix Suns because it's a much more interesting conversation. No disrespect to Pelicans fans. But, of course, Kevin Durant. And we talk about a future Hall of Famer
I don't mean to derail you, but I feel like every time we say something like that, like no disrespect or no whatever, we doing that exact thing.
Oh, disrespect is definitely coming. Right. Oh, the disrespect is definitely coming. But when you think about Kevin Durant and his career, he has not advanced past the second round since leaving the Warriors. He was out for the season with Brooklyn in 2019. Season conference semifinals, lost out in 7 games against the Bucks. That I think that's the toe game where where the 3-pointer was on his toe in 7 games. And then first round, he was bounced out with the Brooklyn Nets in 2021. And now you have and then last year they were bounced out by the Nuggets, which the Nuggets was playing out of the mind. Of course, they got bounced out. And then you look at this game, just a clean sweep by Anthony Edwards and the Wolves, which that's another story in itself, and we'll get to that in a moment. But when you look at Kevin Durant's legacy and what he's meant to the game, there's no question in his scoring. I think he's in the top 20 of scoring right now of all time. He passed Shaq in all-time scoring, top 10. So, you know, he passed Shaq for top 10 in scoring in the NBA. And you think about, he's probably one of the best scorers I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, at a guy that's 6'11", was on paper, he's 6'8", 6'9", but we all know he's about 6'10", 6'11". he kind of started that he changed the game of basketball with his style of play, because you've never seen a guy his size as agile as he is. And when you look at Victor Wembanyama and you know, you look at even Giannis playing at that size and being able to play that point forward, there's no one I could think of that's better. Probably one of the best power forwards to ever play the game. But this blemish of him, he went to, you know, prior to going to the Warriors, we all know the story that he lost to the Warriors with in the Thunder in the conference finals, but they were so close. And then he went to join them in the summer and he had all this success. And ever since he's left the Warriors with Steph, he hasn't had that much success in the postseason. Now, we're not going to count the injury year, but I mean, something's got to give. I mean, I think it has to mean something. I don't know. I'm not going to insult him because, of course, I, you know, gave him his respect and his flowers and everything. But if we're having a real basketball legacy conversation, you know, I don't know if you could put Kevin Durant in the GOAT combo. And at one point, historically, he was considered the best player in the world.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely can't be in that GOAT conversation. I mean, he hasn't proven to do it by himself. He is a guy, right? He'll never be considered that number one guy, right? He's just definitely not at this point in his career. He's getting up in age now. And so, I mean, it's just, I don't know. He's always been, his situation has always been weird. Even his personality, even like how he just kind of handles himself. And it's just, I don't know. I mean, it does take a hit to me. It does take a hit to his legacy, because he hasn't proven outside of those historical teams with the Warriors that he can win, or even, I mean, just win, right? I think he did go to the finals with the Thunder, so I won't say that. He did go to the finals, I think got beat by the Heat, but at least win it without. And so I don't know. I think a little bit is unfair because some stuff happened throughout injuries, like you said, the toe game and just bad good teams, but like the bad chemistry with, you know, those Brooklyn teams, and this team this year didn't have a true point guard. Like, we can make excuses all day, but like the guy just haven't gotten the job done.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you talk about it from that aspect, obviously it changes things from a legacy standpoint. If we were ever talking about anything GOAT wise, I never honestly thought that Kevin Durant would ever be in the GOAT conversation. My conversations with KD are more so, you know, is he potentially a top 10 guy of all time? Is he, you know, when you talk about that debate for the second best small forward of all time between he and Larry Bird, who wins out that debate? Those are more so the classes that I saw Kevin Durant in. And honestly, nothing has really, to me, changed personally for me assessing his legacy. The way that I look at it as well is, you talk about the unfortunate things. The year after the injury with Brooklyn, the year that you talk about the toe game, we have revisionist history now. James Harden hamstring and Kyrie Irving going down in game four of that series took a championship away from Kevin Durant. If either one of those guys doesn't go down, if Kyrie is still playing, or if James Harden is even 80% of himself, they were wiping the floor with the Milwaukee Bucks, who won the championship that year. So definitely, you know, to me, in my opinion, they would have gotten it done in that space. And there's been other things that have transpired. But to me, even when I look at him, and people will ding him from his time with the Warriors, but when looking at that team, and I know that everybody says it's Steph Curry's team and things of that sort, to me, when they got between those lines and when we talked about who was the best player on that team, I will step to anybody in the debate and still say Kevin Durant was the best player on that Warriors team. And that's with Steph Curry that we look at as a top 10 player of all time. That's with Steph Curry that some people try to argue now whether he or Magic Johnson is the greatest point guard of all time. When they step between those lines, Kevin Durant was that guy. Was it easier, you know, on his shoulders to have all of that talent around him? But there were even moments where you even saw probably that second finals where they won it all, where he almost tried to give that MVP to Steph Curry, and Steph Curry just did not take it. And he had to go and take that, you know, and make sure that, you know, they won that series. I think about the fact of the year that he got hurt in that finals, Kevin Durant came back with that messed up basically cat with the calf strain. He was 60 to 70% of himself. In a series where you had Steph Curry, you had Kawhi Leonard on the floor, and he was the best player on that floor in that stretch until he went down with the Achilles. So for me, I get it. Yes, you know, you can say this and that about the legacy. You can say the losses and things of that sort. But I always kind of get down to the nitty gritty of it as well, too, of that all the greats that have the multiple championships and things of that sort, they played on the stacked teams. You know, what championship did Magic Johnson win without the stacked team? What championship did Kareem Abdul-Jabbar win without a stacked team? What championship did Larry Bird win without a stacked team? And so I get it. You know, it's different that he went to a team that had previously won a championship, a team that went 73-9. I get that whole aspect of it. But I'm also an eye test type of person when I look at a player, and eye test has always been there too for me for Kevin Durant. So that's just why I'm on the other side. I can see y'all side, but I'm on a different side.
Yeah, I think he took a hit too when he left, like he did to join the best team in the NBA, the best team historically of all time. He left and went to that team, so it takes a hit for me. That takes a hit. But the Pelicans, yeah, I want to talk about. Is there much to talk? Oh no, can't skip over Anthony Edwards and how great he is, man. Talking trash to KD, said proclaimed that's his favorite player. Dropped 40 to put the Suns away. He's the one, man. To me, he's the one. I think he's the one. He's stepping to stardom in my eyes, superstardom in my eyes. Now, if he, I ain't gonna say superstardom. He stepped into stardom. Now, depending on how far they advance into the playoffs, if he leads his team to I think the Western Conference Finals, I think he's a superstar in my eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. I would absolutely say he is, and they'll keep his teammates in saying that he's the face of the league. I'm not going that far yet. I think he has to, this playoff run
Yeah.
will be the stamp, but watching him in that first series playoffs, he has arrived. He's here.
He is
He's
here.
coming. And he's at a place now where I'm respecting his game and he's bringing it to the best. And he's rising to the moment and he's giving me that those
Did you
greats,
see
those
that
greats
dunk
when I
on
think.
Durant in the
I
last
did. I
game?
did.
Oh
When I
my
think about
goodness.
Kobe, when I think about MJ in these big moments, not scared of it and showing up, I'm just like, oh my God, he's here. He's
That dude
here.
is
22
different,
years
man.
old. He's 22, and his mentality is just, you don't see that in young guys no more. Like, he ain't friends with nobody. He's trying to destroy you when you're on the floor.
I mean, he's the guy that when you talk about guys 25 and under right now, he's the guy that you want. Like Anthony Edwards, I'm gonna ask y'all this because I saw this kind of floating around a little bit. Because I know we had the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Anthony Edwards thing, you know, before, and I might be on a different side of that debate now than I was. But let me ask you this:
Come over to the good side.
you got the next, let's just say 6 to 8 years, and I give you Jayson Tatum or I give you Anthony Edwards.
Give me Ant-Man. I've seen enough of Tatum in his career, and he, you know, for his, I think he's been in the playoffs since his, I think it's either sophomore or rookie year. He's made it to the Eastern Conference. I know finals his sophomore year, Tatum has.
I want to say it's rookie year.
And I think he's been a shell of himself up until probably up until this point, really. And this team is so good and construction in the roster. He doesn't really have to be the guy. But when I seen when he needed to be it, he hasn't shown it. And with Anthony Edwards, I know it's really, really early in this part of his career, but he's shown that he wants to kill. He said in interviews he wants to kill who's ever out in front of him. Durant is his favorite player, and he loved nothing more than to dunk on his favorite player to show him that he has arrived. So give me a guy like that with that mentality, because that mentality and that attitude is contagious and it rubs off on the rest of the team. And that's winning. That's how you win. And that's why I would take Anthony Davis. I think Tatum, I love Tatum's game. He's one of my favorite players to watch, shamefully, as a Laker fan. But I think sometimes he's just a little too passive for me.
Yeah, Anthony Edwards. But I would say this
You heard him slip up and say, Anthony
to
Davis.
Anthony Davis on my guy, my at
Hey,
heart.
Anthony Davis balled out this year, man.
Oh, he
Got
balled out in the playoffs
balled
until
out.
he got a little. Yeah, don't get me started. Anyway, I'm with you. I got Anthony Edwards, but I'll say this now. What it is. It's April 30 of 2024. Within the next 5 years, 5 to 6 years, but before 2030, before 2030, Anthony Edwards or Jason Tatum won't be a Laker. I don't know why. I don't know where it's coming from. I don't have any sources. It's just a feeling, man. I don't know what one of those dudes are gonna be a Laker.
You I'm think he's gonna be a Laker or you want him to be a Laker?
No, he's gonna be a Laker, man. Y'all calling me crazy now. One of those guys gonna be a
I
Laker.
Ain't calling you crazy because I want to see that. You know, I've been saying Jason Tatum for years, so I've been saying that one, but
well, we fumbled that. Thanks, Magic. Took Lonzo Ball, took everybody but the stars of the league in Atlanta.
Fox.
De'Aaron passed on Fox, passed on
passed
Tatum.
On wait, no. Wait, no. Who that was he a passed different draft.
On? It's some more. It's a long list of guys that he passed on in spite of Tatum. So, I mean.
Was Donovan anyway. Mitchell in that draft, too?
Donovan Mitchell, yep. Yeah. He was in there on, too. Even though Mitch.
Wasn't the first two picks of that draft bus? Or not do it? Wasn't it?
Yeah, that's your boy. Yeah, Markelle Fultz. Yeah,
your twin. Lose your twin.
Chill out.
You went right back on mute at that point. And he said, no. "Go to next topic."
Getting off track here. Okay, so we got the Pelicans that are they got put out, and I have nothing against my hometown team, but I just don't like their fans. But it as far as the Pelicans. What do you do here? B.I.'s contract is up. So when you think about the Pelicans and B.I., who's up for a contract extension, and you look at the run that they had, I like them as a team. I think they got a lot of good pieces there. They got a lot of young pieces. I think they drafted well. I think David Griffin has done a nice job constructing their roster. But that X factor is Zion going to stay healthy? Is he going to lose some weight? They say that he lost a lot of weight since break, but is he going to lose some weight so he could sustain himself? And if that doesn't happen, I'm wondering, does it matter if they re-sign B.I.? B.I. say he wants to be back. I think the right thing to do is bring him back, but even B.I. can't stay healthy.
Yeah. When I looked at it, their coach, right?
Willie Green.
No, I'm sorry. Not their coach. Their GM. I can't think of his name.
David Griffin.
Used to be Griffin.
Griffin, yes, thank you guys. He came out recently and made it very clear that there's going to be changes with this team. He said the last few years they've been looking at their roster, and I'm paraphrasing, and they've been saying, "Hey, let's just give this guy." Let's their thing has been continuity, right? And they wanted to see how this team looked, and he flat out said, "I've seen enough of this team now. We need to make changes. We need to compete and be competitive." I think he's seen enough of this nucleus together, right? And so I don't know what that means for his roster, but I expect the Pelicans to make some big changes. I mean, does it start with Zion? Does it start with trading Zion? Are you tired of seeing this same story play out with him getting injured, him being out of shape? You know, does it start with you say, let's see what I can get for Zion and bring somebody else? Do you walk away from B.I. and bring somebody else in? But, I mean, I'll take my hat off to what he's did with that team because they are – a good team. They did draft well. When you think about Herb Jones, when you think about Trey Murphy, you think about the Alvarado, you think about the pieces that they have there. They have drafted well and they have good core pieces, but they do have to make a change. They're just not good enough to get over that hump. I don't know if that again means trading Zion away. We'll see.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. You definitely can't keep kind of doing the same thing over and over again. That's legitimately insanity. And so, you know, I would say too, you have to also consider potential sign and trade situations with BI as well too. So I really think you're at this point where you make a decision now between Zion and BI, and who do you want to build that franchise around? Who is going to be your guy for the future, and see what kind of assets you can get, you know, for either one of them. But it's definitely time to in essence kind of blow it up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they played a great OKC team, but again, have we seen this roster? Because they always hurt. Is either Zion's hurt for an extended amount of time or B.I. or both? So, you haven't seen it, but I mean, I don't know. They just have some bad luck. Maybe they need to hire a better training staff over there because it seems like anybody that goes there gets hurt all the time, but I don't know. Anyway, we move on. NFL draft recap. You guys last episode did a phenomenal job in my absence. I must admit, I enjoyed the episode. So go check out my guys again, 162. the episode before this one. Y'all did a phenomenal job without me. I was like, man, those guys are having fun. I was listening to y'all. I was like, dang, man, are they gonna have me back? I didn't know, man. I was questioning myself for a moment. But I think that I will start this piece off. You guys know how passionate I am about our New Orleans Saints. So I will go back to draft night on that Thursday night, just trying to enjoy my night. I knew that the Lakers were going to play that later on that night. So I kind of was prepping my mind for that. And then the draft goes on. And then I'm just laughing at Atlanta for the decision that they made. And then we get to our pick, our first round pick. And we decide to take the second best tackle off the board in the NFL draft, as opposed of taking the best player of another position. Let me tell you something. That really irritated me, because I think that the Saints, I don't think that there's one thing that I could point to that we didn't need. But I'm not saying we didn't need an offensive tackle, but why not go after a guy that's the best at their position? They had great receivers out there on the board. They had a great tight end at the board. They had everything that you could have. And we decided to take Talius Fool. How you say that name, Los? Because you was dishing them names out.
Good luck, my brother. Good luck, my brother. I am done with that.
Talius Fuagua. So I did my research on the guy, and I started talking.
Can you say that one more time?
No, I'm not. I don't even know how I tried. But what I'm saying is, I don't understand why we decided to go with the second best prospect on the slate, and you had great options to choose from. So I just feel like it was a situation where we probably was just like, I really would have preferred us to take Dallas Turner in that spot. I really feel like we should have went after a guy like that. We know Cameron Jordan is on his last leg. We know that our linebacker core is starting to age. I don't understand why we just didn't go after like the best player in that position and we went after offensive tackle. Now, the second round, I felt a little better about. We was able to get Kool-Aid McKinstry, which is one of the – probably my best – I had him as the best corner on my board personally. But I really like that pickup, and then it gives us a little bit of flexibility if we were to depart ways with one of our cornerbacks, and you know, tagging with Paulson, the Debo, and what have you. So I did feel like that was a good pick, and then I kind of like the Spencer Rattler pick. I really did. I mean, I think that Spencer Rattler was a 5-star coming out of high school. He was a starter at Oklahoma. He lost his job to the number one picking in draft in this current draft, Caleb Williams, in a Texas game. He went to South Carolina. I mean, I like the pick because it's just like, let's see what he got. I mean, we have nothing to lose. So I do like our third round pick. And from there on, I those guys have to prove themselves in camp. I never heard of them. So, for the draft, I'd give us a grade of probably like a C minus, maybe.
You know what? I respect your honesty, because I mean, it was a C minus, or close to an F for me when I think anything with the Saints. But
how you go from a C to an F?
I'm joking. But no, I mean, again, as we talked about last week, when we look at that draft, we just knew that big run on those offensive tackles was coming, right? And you historically, right, when I think about my team, I know you talk about the Saints. The Rams are in a good place because of 14 straight offensive players were taken, right? The Rams obviously lost one of the greatest players this offseason in Aaron Donald. So they was probably sitting in that position like, wow, I'm happy that all these offensive players are taken. We don't need these positions aren't necessarily a need for us as wide receiver, offensive tackle, right? There was rumors before the draft started when you think about Brock Bowers. The Rams wanted to trade up badly for him into the top 10. They just couldn't find a dance partner. Nobody wanted to give up their pick because of quarterbacks. Everybody wanted those offensive tackles, you know. And so, again, I'm very, very – I think the Saints made a good move because they did get a good one. He is graded as a top tackle. This is one of the top – if you wanted to tackle, get a tackle this year, drafts. I think they did well with the cornerback. As you mentioned, he was my second cornerback, only to Terrion Arnold. You know, his cornerback, his backfield mate. Again, I like what the Saints did. And in the fifth round, when you playing in the fifth round and the Spencer Rattler is there, who the hell heck cares about all of the character issues that they talk about? Who the heck cares about, why he dropped to that far? You're taking a shot at that point, right? As a fifth round quarterback, he's shown flashes. He was the Senior Bowl MVP. He was a guy that I was hoping the Rams took a shot on, in those later rounds, as the Rams have six, had like three or four 6 round picks. So again, I love that pick for y'all. Gives him time. He's not forced into playing right now. He can just wait and see Derek Carr's historically bad contract out and just wait it out and become great behind him and hopefully get a shot and take over that offense.
And I said third round, I meant to say our third pick. Go ahead, Ramon. I'm sorry.
I mean, honestly, I don't have anything to say on the
All
Saints, so.
right, we can move along. You guys can recap your teams.
Like,
Yeah, no, I'll just start with the Rams. The Rams, again, we came in this draft with 11 picks. We wanted to move up to Brock Bowers, couldn't get him. We settled with Jerry Verse, and
that's
he
a
was
hell of a
again
settle. I was about to
just
say
a settle.
settle. That's a hell of a settle.
Again, we never envisioned him being there at 19, but that run on offensive players let a great one of the top two, arguably. Probably number one pass rushers behind probably Dallas Turner or Latu. Those guys went in front of him. But again,
Latu had a
those
neck
guys,
injury though, right?
Latu
He
has
got a
neck,
little,
and he actually retired, 2 years ago because of that neck injury. But again, when those three guys were fighting for that number one spot, when you got a Jared Verse, a guy that's a disruptor, a strong guy, somebody that you can help replace, nobody's going to replace him, not to help replace. And then you bring in his teammate, Fisk, defensive tackle, second round. These guys have played well together. When you bring in those two guys together, they're best friends. They're competing day in and day out. I know how that is. When you have somebody next to you saying, okay, I want to be good. We're both rookies coming in there. It was just genius by the
That's how
Rams to
we
bring
was
these
in high
same
school,
guys.
high lows.
Absolutely. When you have somebody and a good friend next to you, you want to be best. You want to beat them. It's friendly. It's, we'll talk and chop it up afterwards, but I want to be better than you today. So they brought these two guys in that were college teammates, and it's going to push each other. So I'm interested to see how this defensive line post Aaron Donald looks. And so they did well with that, and then they drafted a safety, and they drafted Blake Corum. I think that was a surprise of the draft, right? You think Kyron Williams, when you think of the Rams, as a player that was set, and he did put up amazing numbers last year. And you pretty much draft his photocopy and bring him in, a guy that can, if Kyron Williams goes down with injury, he has been injured in the last couple of years and missed games the last couple of years, that you can trust that Blake Corum can come in and be and replace that production, and your offense doesn't miss a beat. So I like overall what the Rams did, and I think that they did well. I think that they built depth on this team, and I think that, I don't know. It's a young, hungry defense with
What's
a
the
seasoned
grade?
offense. I'll give him a B. I'll give him a B. A B.
I mean, I think of course, once again, unless Rob, you got something on the Rams, because I don't have anything on the Rams either.
No, I don't got nothing. They trash.
But no, transitioning, of course, to the Colts, man. I think that for me, what stuck out the most, obviously, pass rusher position and getting Latu, who, as Los was mentioning and alluding to, one of the top three pass rushers in the draft. I think that honestly, you can't miss it by going with any of those three guys. I probably would have come into the draft, would have probably still had Dallas Turner above Latu. And give or take, between Latu and Jared Verse, I'm a little back and forth on that. But still, I thought it was an effective pick. I mean, it's a guy that had, what, 23 and a half sacks over his last two seasons within
How you
college
cover
football.
his team but don't cover our picks?
Huh?
How you
No,
cover?
I was talking about pass rushers.
Oh,
I was talking
well.
about pass rushers. And so I was
Oh.
saying with us taking a pass rusher or edge rusher, essentially, it could have gone either any way with those top three guys. Like, I don't view that there's big separation with any of those three guys. I probably would have, maybe gone Dallas Turner really at that pick over Latu, but I can understand Latu as well. I think that Dallas Turner is naturally the better athlete, but as far as a pure pass rusher, it's debatable of who is a better pass rusher out of the two. But then also, the second round pick stuck out to me as well. I think that Adonai Mitchell kind of he kind of gets thrown under the radar a little bit because of what his teammate ran in a 40. But if you were to ask me who I actually prefer out of those two guys at the wide receiver position, I would tell you Mitchell before even this draft occurred. And so I think that they did what we need to do as an organization and building around your quarterback. You see all these other young quarterbacks, and what are they going out and doing? They're going and getting weapons that surround them. And so now they put it, you know, to where you look at a guy, Anthony Richardson, he has his wide receiver one in Michael Pittman Jr. You know, he has his guy in Josh Downs who hit the scene last year. Now you have Adonai Mitchell that steps in. I think that I don't know why I'm forgetting my guy's name, but I feel like he's been big time passed up on the depth chart now. When we took 2 years ago, it's escaping me.
Right? Alec Pierce,
Pierce. I think he's down the depth chart at this point. But I think that that was definitely a focus coming into this draft. And then I think they did address, you know, other positions of need, whether you look at things from the safety standpoint, really defensive backfield as a whole, honestly. And so when I looked at the draft, I probably would say that we came out around that B minus, B category, somewhere between a B and a B minus. You know, it was a solid draft, but it's not a draft that I'm like, oh, Ballard killed it this time, you know.
So if we're giving ourselves, our teams that grade, what grade are we giving the Atlanta Falcons?
I don't know. I mean, as a fan, I would be disappointed. You know, you go and give a guy a $100 million guaranteed contract, right? Then you go and drive a quarterback. But at the same time, as a fan, I'll be disappointed. But as in the GM, if I was sitting in the GM seat and I'm saying, hey, this team is good and I don't expect to ever be in the top 10 in the next 4 years, why not go through this Jordan Love? And they've actually mentioned this, go through the Jordan Love, Patrick Mahomes plan of, hey, let's sit this guy for a year or two. He may be older. He may age a little bit. But when he comes in, he's going to be ready. We don't miss a beat at the quarterback position. And again, you don't know what you're going to get with the Kirk Cousins situation coming off an Achilles injury. He may not be the same guy. He may stink it up. Yes, you may have to swallow that money that you paid him. But again, you got your guy, you will hope, right, at the eighth pick to step right in and that offense can keep going. And again, Michael Penix, only thing to knock on him was his injuries, right? If Michael Penix didn't have his injuries, Michael Penix would have easily been in that conversation with those top three, four guys. Or was he a four pick?
He was a four quarterback.
Those top three guys. So,
yep. And I think the thing about it is, it's definitely very easy for us to, of course, as we're doing, have the quick reaction to it. But we're not going to honestly know what this is and pans out until we see, you know, two, three, maybe years down the line. Now, I can get where people come from of saying that, hey, you got Kirk Cousins. You want to probably be in that potential window of contention. You have the weapons that are surrounding him. So why not go for it at this point? But to Los's point, I mean, when you see your guy there and you feel like this can be your franchise quarterback and you're trying to forecast out, you know, 5 years down the line, things of that sort, then, you know, by all means, you got to go get your guy. The only thing I will say to that, of course, you have the team, you have the talent that's there. But hopefully you're around to see that come to fruition, because if it goes left and if it goes wrong, then you might not see the fruit of it.
And shamefully so, the guy comes out of our personnel camp. So that really kind of, you know, out of the Saints personnel camp. So I kind of, you know, it kind of got me thinking about, dang, these are why we made these questionable decisions. But my point to your point, Lois, I hear what you're saying, and I do see that vantage point of the GM point of view. And I hear you, Ramon. But if you're giving a guy $100 million, why are you giving him $100 million if you're not sure that he's going to be the guy? You gave Kirk Cousins money as if you expect him to be your guy and you're going to surround him with the weapons that he needs to be successful. So to pass up on a weapon that could make him successful on either side of the ball, it baffles me, and it's a lost opportunity. Why are we drafting for ahead? I think with the nucleus of the Falcons, shamefully to say, I know that they are our rivals as a Saints fan, but I always said that the Falcons have the core of talent there offensively to be a powerhouse. You got your quarterback. You were a quarterback away. You got your guy. You had an opportunity to add on to it, and you didn't. And I don't know. I'm raising my eyebrow. I see the video of the GM talking to them. I don't know if that's real or what they were talking about, but it didn't look like the owner was too
happy.
That's
that Draymond talk when he's talking to KD.
Right. And to your point as well, too, I mean, Michael Penix was going to be there at eight. You would know that.
Or the second round.
Yeah, you would know that, honestly, in February that he was going to be there. So going into free agency, you know, and making the decision to go and get Kirk Cousins, I think that that's where maybe you were a little bit maybe more thinking about and a little bit more puzzled of that decision, because if Michael Penix has been your guy, I don't think that you just figured out a week or two or a month before the draft. Mm-hmm. I think that you knew that even heading into free agency. So why don't you get somebody on a cheaper, more cost control type of deal that can still be a veteran that maybe Michael Penix can sit behind for a year or two, but you're able to spread out those resources to other positions. So I think that maybe that was the move instead of necessarily Michael Penix not being the move.
Yeah, I mean, when I just look at it, I just overall, I would love to get into the psyche and know the timeline of things. I think that's something we would never know, but it'll be interesting to see, like, where did y'all say, hey, this is our guy? When did y'all start evaluating him to be your guy? Was this post-free agency? Like, at what point was the timeline? It's something we'll never know, but it'll be interesting. It will be interesting to know how that all shaped out.
Well, I, for one, I love when the Atlanta Falcons fail. So I loved it when they failed in the Super Bowl and let Breeze, when they let the GOAT come back 28-3. And I love them fumbling this draft pick. So overall, I wanted to go through high level guys, go through it. Who's your guy that fell in the perfect position? Just one prospect that you feel like fell in the right position and will succeed.
Yeah, I'll go start with that. We talked about it last week. I think I even have a clip. I should have clipped it from last week. I projected and was hoping that the Chiefs added some speed. And I even said, I was like, if the Chiefs can add some speed in this draft, why not go and get the fastest guy that in on earth? And they went and got, they even trading up. They went and traded up for him in Xavier Worthy. So I love that match. I think the Chiefs offense have been missing speed. And they've been kind of bogged down. Granted, I mean,
they won the Super Bowl, so they ain't missed too much.
Back-to-back championships, which speaks to the greatness of Pat Mahomes. But I like what that matchup, you know. They also got Marquise Brown, Hollywood over there. And so you got two guys that are, I think a lot of people are comparing Xavier Worthy to Marquise Brown. That was his player comp coming out. So you get two speed guys now, and you still got Travis Kelce, who just got extended 2 years. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with the Rice situation. I think I love that match, and I think with the arm of Patrick Mahomes, he's going to have some fun in that offense, especially with Andy Reid calling plays.
I would say from a prospect standpoint and from somebody feeling that they landed in a perfect situation, who feels that they landed in a better situation than J.J. McCarthy? J.J. McCarthy is a quarterback coming out. You get handed a top two, top three, if not top one wide receiver in the game. You get handed those weapons that are sitting over there in Jordan Addison. You eventually, of course, getting Hockenson back. That team is, you know, tailor-made to be built around a guy on a cost-control rookie contract that has a chance that if he goes in there and does what he needs to do. Now, I'm not saying I'm the highest on J.J. McCarthy, but if we talk about somebody feeling that they landed in a great scenario, any of those top quarterbacks would have said, me going to Minnesota is the place that I want to be. So J.J. McCarthy would be my guy, and then I'll let you go. I have a second place guy too, but I don't want to steal your thunder potentially if that's your guy.
My guy's Byron Murphy. I think he fell into Seattle, a defensive tackle out of Texas. I think, you know, Seattle has historically been defense first. And what better pick, what more appropriate pick is to pick probably one of the best defenders in this draft. And I think Byron Murphy is going to have a really good career, you know. So I really like the Byron Murphy pick for the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
What do you think about the Chargers taking Joe Alt?
Oh man, I wanted Malik Nabers to be there. So
I know
bad,
that would have been the perfect.
Oh, I wanted Malik to be there, bro. So bad, man.
That's crazy.
I wanted Malik to be there, but I'm gonna say this: even though they got several weapons over there, I don't think that that Brian Thomas Jr. landed in a bad spot.
Landed in a really good spot.
You know that they wanted, they had Calvin Ridley kind of somewhat in that slot last year. Now you had bring in Brian Thomas Jr., a guy that can pretty much do it all.
He can
stretch
everything.
The field. He's a freakish athlete. Like, he can become their wide receiver one. You with a good quarterback and Trevor Lawrence over there, and you also are in a situation where you don't have to have the weight and burden on you at wide receiver one, because you still do have good enough talent around you that can, you know, not have you isolated to where you got to take all the coverage, but also too, you can be that guy. So Brian Thomas Jr. is another guy I think landed in a good spot.
So I posed this question: who landed in the in a? Oh, I got an honorary one: Jaden Daniels, right up the street from me. The Commanders took him. I think that it was a great spot for him because the expectations are ground level for him. He doesn't have anything to come behind. The Commanders have been so bad for so long. I don't think they've been at the pinnacle of anything since Robert Griffin got hurt tragically and his career ended. Jaden Daniels can have his city on his back and on his shoulders if he comes in and perform well. We know how talented he is. You know, I think that they do have to get him some more weapons around him. I think they do got to get him you know, I know they got the running back out of LA, but I think that he's on a decline. And I know we got why am I blanking out? McLaurin out there, which is a very talented receiver for me. So I think that Jaden landed in a pretty decent spot. I think right now, I mean, I think that the Commanders can make some noise. They can win some games. They will be better than they were last year. So I like Jaden, and I'll definitely be at some Commanders games this year.
Yeah, I mean, I like Jaden. I would say the first two quarterbacks, even the Bears, you can say arguably he.
That was for the take. Yeah, that was the obvious one.
I feel like he's landed in his position historically with the best three receivers that we've ever seen for a number one pick, right? When you think about Keenan Allen, when you think about Rome Odunze, when you think about DJ Moore, those three receivers and Cole Kmet, those four guys alone is probably the best situation a number one pick can land in. So I like his position.
And he still has a solid run game that he can lean on too.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to the GM out there, man. What is his name? Shout out to him, man. He really, he did his thing this offseason. I can't think of his name. Shout out to you, man. You did it like Sam Presti, man. But I think that's it, man. I think that's all we got in needed to get into, man. I think we touched on it all, unless y'all could think of something. Did we cover it all?
No, I just wanted to say one spot I didn't love was Drake. Hoping that I wanted to see Jaden Daniels land in a good spot, but I was hoping it was not the Patriots. I just don't think the Patriots is a good foundation for a quarterback. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah,
I didn't like where Bowers landed either.
That was what I was gonna say. That was my one right there.
With the Raiders, man. He don't even have a quarterback. I'm like, ew, like who do you have throwing
just
to?
Took
like,
a tight end last year.
I know, like, what are y'all gonna do with that? Oh my goodness, man. He should have pulled him a Eli, man. Eli Manning and say, I ain't going to y'all. But yeah, guys, I think we did another one. If you hung around this long, we appreciate you for listening with us, man. Make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast. Opinionated Benchwarmers, wherever you like to listen to your podcast at, you know, whether that's Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, wherever it is. And also YouTube. We've started a YouTube. We are dropping recap clips here and there. So check us out, Opinionated Benchwarmers on YouTube as well. Make sure that you are subscribed because that's how you can get fresh content. We may not just even have podcasts, though. We'll have just content in general. Well, that's somewhere down the line, but you want to be locked in for when that happens. But until next time, we out of here.
Later.